CISNSO Strategy and Operating Plan Working Group at the ICANN 54 meeting in Dublin. We are having new members in the house as there was a call last summer to increase the number of participants in this working group. And so I'd like to welcome everybody, first of all, including ICANN staff, and I'd like to start with a short round table introducing each of us attending this meeting, and also if there are remote participants, I'm looking at Kim and Christina. I guess they will tell me by waving their hand if there is any remote participant or remote participants. I'll start with myself, and I'm Giovanni Seppia, chairman of this working group, and also external relations manager at EURIDW registry operator. And let's move on my left.
Xavier Calvez, ICANN staff.
Christy Kennedy, Pharmacy Centre Council. Stephen Monaghan, Darling Reed, the main name commissioner.
The editor of APTLB.
Alexander Slopery, CFO at .RS, to the register.
Paul Havey, Vice President, Corporate Services, CIRA.
I'm Alan McGilvey, also from CIRA. I'm just observing today, Giovanni, if that's all right. But I'm a long-time observer.
I received an email from someone.
Christina Nordstrom, CIRA Secretary.
Kim Carlson, ICANN staff.
Becky Nash, ICANN staff.
Carol Cornell, ICANN staff.
Thanks a lot. I've also to note some apologies which were received in the past days till today, and they are from Andreas Musiela from .de, the German registry, Philippe Dubois from the Belgium registry.de, and Rosalia Morales from the Costa Rica CR registry. So thanks again, everybody. The agenda you've seen on the screen has been circulated in the past weeks, and would you like to add any point to the agenda, or is there any comment on the agenda before we move forward? Yeah.
This is Christina. I think we have an additional apology from Pablo Rodriguez.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Giovanni.
Yeah, sorry.
Regarding the agenda, we have a bit more topics than the two that are listed in the item number 2, but we'll try to stay nonetheless within the time frame that you had suggested earlier of 30 minutes.
Okay, thanks a lot. Any other points against the agenda which we see on the screen? No? So let's start with the an update from ICANN Finance Department on the planning relating to the 5-year operating plan, and also the planning that is started for the fiscal year 17 operating plan and budget. So I leave the floor to Xavier and Carol and Becky.
Thank you, Giovanni. I would like that we can start by introducing Becky in her functions, because she is a relatively recent member of the finance department. So Becky, can you introduce yourself and your responsibilities, please?
Yes, thank you, Xavier. Again, Becky Nash, and I am the VP of Finance at ICANN. I've been in my role approximately 8 months now, and I'm responsible for all of the accounting and FP&A functions. That includes transactional accounting, traditional AP, AR, billing, payroll, and the FP&A, which includes all of the budgeting, management reporting, and audit, and tax as well. So I'm very happy to be here. Thank you.
Talking the presentation.
Good. Okay, we're going to get started. This is Becky Nash again with an operations update. We have an agenda here today then of financials. We're going to do an overview. We're going to do the FY17 operating plan and budget and five-year operating plan update process, an update on our enterprise risk management, KPI beta dashboard, and then organizational excellence. So starting with the financial overview, this slide here is an overview of our financial reporting processes for transparency and accountability. We're highlighting that we have the quarterly stakeholder calls each quarter, and that the latest one was held on October 6th. And we have quarterly financial packages that we publish on our website after each quarter end. We have an extensive budget, operating plan and budget process that we'll be covering today along with the timeline. And I'd just like to highlight that in addition to these processes, we also publish our audited financial statements from external audit and also our Form 990 on our website, along with many other types of ad hoc reporting as well. So now we're going to move to a financial update for FY15, and I'm going to hand it over to Xavier.
Thank you, Becky. This is a quick overview of our FY15 financials. In case you have not had a chance to attend the Q4 FY15 quarterly stakeholder call that happened on August 20th, where we presented the full year results because Q4, of course, was the last quarter. Since then, we've also had the Q1 FY16 quarterly stakeholder call, and we will see a few other slides relative to that quarter a little bit later. At a very high level, you may remember that we had a budget of 104 million of revenues, 104 million of expenses, and then initiative expenses on top funded through the reserve fund for 7 million. That was our budget. We had, if you remember, throughout the year, early on in the year, identified the risk for lower revenues driven by lower registry fixed fees, which materialized. We'll see that in the next slides. And we had therefore started early on in the year to contain our expenses to ensure that they don't exceed revenue. So at the end of the year, the revenues were 100, actual revenues were 102 million, so 2 million below budget. Our baseline expenses were contained at 100 million, therefore generating a purely operational excess of 2 million. And the initiative expenses had an overrun of 2 million versus the budget. So as a result, we ended up the year between baseline and operating expenses, as well as the revenue, we ended up exactly at the budgeted position with the variances that I just indicated. Next. This is a breakdown of our revenue by types of fees. At a very high level, the transaction fees were very close to budget. You can see that between a registry and a registrar transaction fees, we were basically at budget. The registry fixed fee, as indicated earlier, was approximately 25% below budget as a result of those of the registries delegated into the root being lower at the start of the year in number and continued to be lower throughout the year. Therefore, the fixed fee generated by the registries was lower as well, and that's approximately 5 million. This is
nearly exactly what we had predicted fairly early on in the year. And the registrar other fees include notably the accreditation fees, the application fees, and the positive variance there of actually $2.5 million, this is rounded, is largely driven by approximately 550 applications for new accreditations that were not anticipated and that generated that amount of revenue. The other revenue, just as a note of interest to you guys, includes the CCTLD voluntary contributions as well as the sponsorship revenue for ICANN meetings. And those were approximately on budget. Moving on, it may be of interest to you to see those volume information on registrations, on transactions. Transactions versus registrations being for us, a transaction is an annual increment of a registration. So the budget was $164 million of transactions. Approximately 115 to 120 million of that is .com. And the total was slightly lower, 159 million. It breaks down, as you can see below. The legacy TLDs were a bit above, 2% above the budgeted volume, which itself was 2% above the previous year. So effectively, year on year, the volume has increased approximately 4%. The new GTLD transactions was about half of what the original budget was planning for, which we kind of knew early on in the year would be much lower. And the interesting part is that the billable transactions out of the 7.4 million of transactions relative to new GTLD, only a fraction is billable because of the threshold applied for the new GTLD for billable transactions. Those billable transactions out of the 7.4 million is 3.6, which is nearly 50%. So it's an interesting ratio that we're starting now coming out of the little history that we have on new GTLDs. On the transactions. So you can see that we had budgeted a ratio of two billable transactions out of three new GTLD transactions. The reality appears to be more at one for two. And we have budgeted for FY16 one out of three. So we will probably need to see how to track it during FY16 if we are the 1 to 3 or if we are the 2 to, or, sorry, the 1 to 2 that we see right now in actual 15. Next. This is our expenses. As we said, actual 100 million, budget 104. Forgot to say that this is the ICANN operations defined as everything but the new GTLD program, which is the evaluations of the applications, which is a program that continues. The program is dealt with later in the slides. So this is just a baseline operation expenses with broken down by large categories of costs. The two categories that are mainly below budget are personnel that was a bit lower than budget by 2%. 5% approximately, a bit less, largely driven by simply a little bit slower hiring than originally planned. Professional services also lower because some projects were delayed, notably the IDN program was a bit slower than originally anticipated. That's one of the components of the professional services variance. And travel is slightly higher. The rounding makes it look like it's a lot, but it's about a million. And it's just the number of meetings had cost us more than originally anticipated, either flights or a number of participants, and including supported travel, a bit higher during FY16. FY15, but those figures exclude travel and meetings relative to the USG transition, which we will see later. Next. So talking about the USG transition, so these are a representation of the costs of the stewardship transition project. The numbers are rounded up there, but the budget was $7 million. It was determined very early on last year, if you remember, somewhere in April last year, 3 weeks after the NTIA announced the end of the contract, which was the beginning of the transition work. So it was really an envelope rather than a budget, to be honest. The actual cost turned out to be $8.7 million. This is rounded here to $9 million. And here is the breakdown. So a certain amount of personnel corresponding to the allocation of staff support to the project, the travel and meetings for the various meetings of the CCWG, CWG, and ICG. And then the largest buckets being of other professional services and independent legal advice. So in the other professional services, there is the internal legal advice from Jones Day. In the independent legal advice bucket on the right, there is the Fidley Austin costs as well as Adler and Calvin costs that have supported the work of the both client groups, being the CCWG and the CWG. The ICG costs don't, or the ICG has not required legal advice, so they are not concerned with that. Next. This is FY16, and Becky is going to cover FY16.
Thank you, Xavier. This is our Q1 FY16 as presented at the latest quarterly stakeholder call in early October. These figures are estimates due to the timing of the quarterly stakeholder call. We had not fully finalized the closing of the accounting month, so our published financials are using estimates. As you can see here, the Q1 estimate of $26 million is right on budget of $26 million for revenue. Our baseline expenses, operating and capital, are just slightly below budget. The expenses is mainly due to timing and phasing early in the year and the phasing of the budget. As you can see, the initiative expenses are right on, and we'll talk a little bit about these components in the next two slides. And our Q1 estimate net asset contribution, you can see, is we're slightly positive there. And again, this is due to the timing that we're early in the year. This next slide is the revenue estimates. Here on this slide, you can see that the estimated revenue for Q1 is flat against budget. The components, you can see that the transaction fees, both from registries and registrars, are right on budget estimate, and that the registry fixed fees are slightly above budget, and that is just due to the fact that we had a higher number of actual registries than what we had budgeted approximately 8 months ago. So again, it's due to our estimated budgeting process. All the other components of revenue are flat against budget. And again, we are early in the year, so this is what we would have expected. This next slide is our baseline operating expenses along with capital. On this slide, primarily you can see our largest cost component is personnel. The Q1 personnel expense is below budget, and this is primarily due to slower hiring than budgeted headcount, and this is a trend that we may expect throughout the year. The other components of travel and meetings is primarily due to the phasing of travel during the year and the amount of projects that we accomplished during Q1. Professional services are also lower than budget in Q1, and this is primarily the timing of contracted services, and again due to the type of projects and what we've been doing during Q1. The other categories, administration and capital, these are right on budget as of the end of Q1. This next slide is a breakdown of our Q1 initiatives estimates. I'd like to point out that the initiatives are funded from the Reserve Fund, and the USG stewardship transition is slightly over budget during Q1, and this is just due to the unbudgeted legal expenses. There are several other types of initiatives, as you can see, and again, net-net, total initiatives are on track at budget, but there are some differences by category. Okay, this next slide is the breakdown of the USG stewardship transition. Again, just highlighting the components of the expenses, where, again, over budget, the estimate is at $2.8 million versus the budget of $1.8. And again, as we said earlier, it's due primarily to the unbudgeted legal expense.
Vicki, just a quick comment for everyone that the two donut graphs that we've looked at on the USG transition, as well as more detailed information about the independent legal advice costs, is on a web page that is on the USG transition website. There we have created a project cost web page on that page, and you can find these slides as well as a few PDF files that provide more information on the independent legal advice cost, if you would.
Thank you.
And this next slide now is an update on the new G program, and I'm going to pass it back to Xavier, who's going to cover the next few slides.
Sorry.
Thank you, Becky. I circulated an email,
I think it was yesterday, with the the page Xavier was referring.
Thank you, Giovanni. Thank you, Becky. So this is a view of the new GTLD program's cost over multi-year. As you know, the program has been going on for now 3 years and for another two. On the left is simply the very total of both application fees collected at the top in the dashed bar and the expected amount of costs for the entire program of application processing costs only. So refunds and application processing costs. Those costs exclude potential risk costs, which obviously by definition we don't know. And you can see the gap in blue between the $362 million of application fees collected, the $274 million of costs, which includes refunds, and the gap between the two is currently estimated to be $89 million. We review the financials for the program on a quarterly basis because, as you can tell, these costs include an estimate for the future year's costs. So we review that forecast on a quarterly basis because we actually use that forecast for accounting purposes. And Paul, you know, this is a percentage of completion method. You have then on the right the breakdown of that total by the years, so the 3 years passed in the first small column there, then FY15 actual, then the forecast and budget for 16 and forecast for 17, and refunds to be processed throughout. Again, the costs that don't appear there are the hard-to-predict costs that will appear in the remainder of the program and for which the $89 million there of remaining funds, difference between fees collected and projected costs, will help cover and were designed to be covering. Next. This is the our funds. So this is a balance sheet picture. This group, I can use those words because they are known. We break them down into two different buckets, the new GTLD program-driven funds and the ICANN operations funds that are the ongoing funds of ICANN operations on the right. So on the left, the new GTLD program, we still have currently approximately $157 million of application fees unspent.
And we have also collected over the past few months, as you know, most of you, the auction proceeds resulting from the last resort auction to resolve the contention sets. And doesn't want to come by me.
No. It was clear.
Too many French in
it
the
was
same
clear.
Place.
Some people might take pictures. It might be what...
Yeah. And the variance of funds is relatively limited. It's simply operational variances between over the quarter of Q1, consumption of funds on the program to process invoices and payments as well as refunds. There has not been any auction proceeds collected during the quarter. They were all collected by the end of June, those that have happened, and there's not been any new auctions happening since. And the operating fund and the reserve fund are evolving as per the usage of the payment of invoices and collection of fees, of course. On the operating fund and the reserve fund, it evolves with the market variations for the investments that we have, which during Q1 has not been very good, but since then has started already recovering, and also the withdrawals that we do from the reserve fund to pay for the initiatives cost, as Becky indicated earlier. And we're done with that section.
Thank you, Xavier. I'm going to give you a highlighted view of some of the process we're using for the FY17 operating plan and budget. First of all, we did kick off earlier than ever before the whole process for collecting and establishing and developing the FY17 operating plan and budget. It included some lessons learned, some of the challenges and key successes, some process and timeline, as well as we are including the five-year operating plan and budget in that development as well, and they are going in parallel to ensure that those two are integrated. We are having this evening from 5 to 8 our working group session, and we hope that any of you have a chance will come and help and participate in that section. And we will have further dialogue on revenues and several other ideas that will make it useful, including some of the assumptions we'll be using. And then lastly, we have our operations update, which is tomorrow between 9:15 and 10:30, if you'd like to participate.
Wednesday.
As also a follow-up, and it's a little bit more detailed presentation than what you see today. And then the next steps is we will continue internally to continue to build out and kick off and have several other webinars along. I'm not going to go through this slide in great detail. This is some lessons learned. This is following up from some of the lessons we've talked here before, but it is taking those lessons learned and moving them forward to improve our process as we go. Next slide. These are some of the specific areas that we wanted to focus on this time based on the lessons learned from last time. Better integration, more communication, the USG transitional impact. Go ahead, Xavier.
Just I'm slightly frustrated that this list is shorter than the list on the previous slide because we would like to make sure we have a good grasp of everything we can improve. And if any ideas come from this group on what we could improve that are not on this list, please feel free to send them to us as soon as they come so that we can try to at least have a good picture of what we can improve. At this stage, my biggest concern or aspiration is that we manage to engage more people into the process to expand the participation and have input from a more diverse set and representation of the community, and which also helps relieving those hardcore people like you who spend a lot of time on this process, but also should be helped by more. So that's something we need to work on, and we're going to try to develop a few approaches to do that. One thing that is fairly obvious, for example, we've simply published the webinar of the 22nd on the website, and we had more participation in that kickoff webinar than we had before. So there are very simple things to do, but obviously there are also more complicated things that we need to do to be able to gather more participation into the process. And we know it's a challenging process, it's a technical process, and it's not a very accessible process for a basic, for an average participant who does not have experience in that process otherwise. You guys know that very well. Thank you.
Savvy?
Thank you. So at the outset of the planning a few weeks ago, we tried to spell out for ourselves a few of what we see the challenges, but that are therefore also key success factors for the budget, because if we manage to address those challenges, then we reduce the risk of issues on the process. The USD transition, of course, how are we going to take into account the USD transition is definitely going to be something important for us to address. We will discuss that tonight during the workshop extensively, and we'll have help from Trang Nguyen on that topic, who is in charge of the implementation part. We will have a new CEO. So the timeline of the new CEO's arrival is April 1st. As some of you who have seen our timeline may remember, we intend to publish a full draft of the operating plan and budget a few weeks before that. So that new CEO will have very limited impact on that budget. So it's a challenge.
Depends on the new CEO.
Yeah.
Well, any new CEO will have limited impact on the budget.
Wow. You got Berlusconi?
I don't know that he's applied. But as an example, one of the types of actions to try to mitigate the uncertainty for the new CEO, that is to try to increase, for example, the contingency. Do we want to do that, to need a little bit more flexibility for the new CEO? And it's more a question than an assertion or an assumption. Of course, we have this year for the first time a phase of update of the operating plan. So now we have an operating plan that was produced early last year that was broken down into 5 years, and FY17 will be year two. So we will need to update year two of the plan as well as the rest of the plan, the years of the plan, to reflect what we have accomplished during year one, which is FY16, that we are in right now, and how different that set of accomplishments will have been from what was in that year one of the operating plan. And then revise, as a result, the year 2, 3, 4, and 5 of that operating plan, and year 2 is FY17 that we will be planning for. So that update of the 5-year strategic operating plan, will be feeding or informing the 1-year operating plan that will be the basis of the budget for FY17. But this is a new phase. We've never done that so far. So we need to slate that new phase into the process, which I'll go directly to the number 5, which is our timeline was already tight, as you all know. So fitting a new phase in it is a challenge of its own. But as long as we have a calendar and we're disciplined on sticking to it, then we should be able to, in the calendar that we've designed so far, lets us do that. But we have no room for dinner. Back to number 4. How to be able to provide more information than we have so far on the budget, notably functional information on costs. How much does policy cost? How much does IANA cost? How much does the number of projects cost is what we have. We don't necessarily have fully in the current format of the information that we produce and that we would like to try to make some progress towards. not a challenge, resource limitation. Everybody is in the same boat. We have resource limitation like other companies. We need to manage, and we're lucky that we still have some revenue increases. But it's, of course, a matter of prioritization and allocation of resources within the organization that we need to make sure we address. So those are challenges, but I also view that as a good map of what we need to pay attention to in order to manage our budget process to success, and success being completed on time with extensive community input, of course. Next, Carol.
We are continuing to follow our planning cycle, and this phase we're combining the five-year and the annual much closer together, and we will continue to look at how to make that process continually improved as part of it. But this planning cycle is the same as we've showed before, and we are continuing to follow that planning process. We are trying to hope to be more consistent, which would give us a good end result in terms of the process, the data, and the information. We're using the same management structure we have used in the five-year, and actually we started a year or two before that, but it's a reminder there are five objectives, 16 goals, 61 portfolios in FY16, and 300-plus projects, which is very much to Xavier's point when we look at the amount of work we have for the budget and the plan, what is the prioritization of that workload. This is to show you we are going to use the same format. We had the five-year operating plan. The feedback we received from you and many others was if we could standardize and not change it every year so you could track through year after year. This is an example where we're just going to use the same five-year and update it and redline it, but it is also a reminder we're not adding on to it. So if we had a five-year operating plan, we're only actually reflecting four additional years, and then the next year will be 3 years, and then by 2 years we'll probably start the whole process again. Go on. This is what we're going to do in order to give you a report. We're going to forecast as best possible how we will end FY16 with regards to the deliverables. We'll try to keep it as straightforward, the phasing, how are we doing, either completing, carryover, or in progress, to give a full big picture of what deliverables we said we would do and where we stood, which is a new complement to what we've done in the past. This is just saying we're going to take those changes and reflect it for the remaining five-year duration. This is the document you had typically seen. I put in red the things in which would potentially be updated. For example, if we change a portfolio, we will reflect that change. We will reflect the change if there's a key performance indicator. Many of you have actually given us a lot of feedback on the key performance indicators. As you know, we actually have published, as of September, the KPI beta dashboard, and we are continuing to update it on a monthly basis. Not every KPI is being updated on a monthly basis, and if you look there, there are a few that are still in development, but it has a roadmap there saying when that KPI will be put in place. It also says that if there's a dependency, as Xavier would indicate, we would share it here, and we would delete the FY16 and then just reflect the 17, 18, 19, and 20 in terms of what to expect when you see the document as an end result. Okay. This Xavier already explained that we're taking the input from the five-year and incorporate it into a new FY17. That format is the same as like we had last year as well. And as you remember, last year we actually produced a budget for every project, and that would continue as to what we hope to accomplish in this process. This is the timeline. I'm not going to talk about it in great detail. The effort here that you need to know is we are aiming by March 5th to be able to produce the document in draft form for public comment with the typical 45-day period, and we're telling everybody in advance so they can plan for and see that information and provide timely input and as much input to incorporate in process. This is a very similar time frame as last year as to how this duration of the SO and AC additional budgeting. Xavi, do you have anything you want to say?
Do you want to go back? I don't want to be nitpicking, but we are planning to try to have a public comment period of 55 days as opposed to 45 days to extend it. So that there's more time for the public to comment. One of the drivers is more time is always better if we can fit it. But also, since there will be more information in that draft than before, simply by the fact that there will be the update to the five-year plan along with the one-year plan and budget. So it's two sets of information to look at and come, and they're very related, of course, but nonetheless two different pieces of information. So we, as you all know, we've never produced the budget as early as that. This past draft budget was published 7 weeks in advance of the previous year. This one is intended to be published 3 weeks in advance of this past, 2 weeks in advance of this past year. So we're pushing things forward as much as possible to be able to give more time to the public comment process and the phases after the public comment process, which are really key because those were those steps of the process that didn't exist before and prevented us to have a full accountability process. I know it's all for you that I said that. But the ability to basically use the public comments, answer the public comments, explain the answers to the public comments, bring the board into those answers, and be able to have the board and the community understand the position after those public comments have been addressed and responded to, and then have the board providing an approval on the basis of a fully communicated process of public comments. And that, you remember that phase was either in non-existent or extremely short in the previous years. So we need to try to keep it as well supported in time so that we can complete it. So, for example, the period of considering the comments, reviewing them, addressing them, is intended to take about a month during the month of May, between the 1st and the 30th of May, including, as we have done this year, calls with the organizations that will have submitted comments to go through those comments with the submitters, which helps us understand better the comments. If we understand them better, it helps us answer them better, and it also gives more insights to the submitters as to the spirit or the mindset in which we have understood the comments and the way we will respond to them. And Giovanni participated to that call that we did for the comments that were submitted by your group. And it was very useful to us. I think it was also useful from your perspective. So we want to repeat that. Thank you. ERM update. So ERM being Enterprise Risk Management, this is a quick heads up for you. I don't want to spend too much time on it, but we have created the Enterprise Risk Management function 2 years ago at ICANN. After 2 years of a lot of work to take it off the ground, it is off the ground, but we are giving ourselves an opportunity to review where we're at. And we have done an assessment in June and July of all the aspects of risk management. I will show the next slide to explain what that is. With the board, during the workshop that happened with the board in LA 3 weeks ago, we went over a target definition of how mature we think we need to be in terms of enterprise risk management. And you will see that picture later. We're in the process of validating that suggested target, and we will then assess the feasibility of where we want to be, because it's going to take effort and resources and time. And we will then validate a roadmap, and we will communicate this roadmap for community comment and feedback as soon as it's established as a draft, of course. The next slide, please. So, this is a blank slide, but what this shows you is the map that we're trying to fill in. So the rows represent various aspects of risk management. To manage your risk, you need to define a risk strategy, a risk appetite. How much risks are you willing to take? you need to have risk governance. How do you manage and monitor your risks? What is your risk culture? How widespread is the notion of risk in the organization? You need to assess your risks and measure them. We have a rating methodology that we're in the process of defining, for example. You need to manage them, meaning mitigate them. You need to monitor those risks. You need to report on those risks. And you need to have tools and processes to produce the information that helps you managing those risks. So these are the seven components of managing across the organization risks. And then there's, in Collins here, different stages of maturity of savviness, I would say, about for each of those roles, and where do we want to be as an organization against that development cycle, I would say that maturity cycle is what the strategy that the board has been working on is trying to develop. It's still a draft, which is why this is not filled in yet, but obviously, you could wonder, but you want to be advanced everywhere, except that being advanced everywhere is an extremely costly exercise. It takes a lot of effort and time. And is that the best use of our resources? So I can tell you, for example, that the risk strategy and appetite is something that the board is thinking needs to be integrated at least. So integrated means, I don't want to go too much into the details, but it simply means that the strategy is taken into account in all aspects of the organization. So that's very meaningful. The risk governance, we want it to be advanced. That's what the board wants to do. We want to be really monitoring in a very professional fashion the risks associated or the enterprise-wide risks. So we are mapping this, the target of where we want to be across the board, that will then lead us to a set of action plans, then a roadmap, and we'll share all that with the community to obtain feedback. Next.
I'm going to keep the next two sets very simple. We've talked about KPI dashboards before. I told you that we've actually launched and it's available. This is just to remind you that we're starting with a goal level set of KPIs, which we'll call the strategic group, and that's really what we publish on a monthly basis. We are in the process, as we said, because this is a new effort, and so we're in continual development of those. So we have on a monthly basis a review, a refinement, an assessment as we collect data and or have and begin more and more dialogue with stakeholders as to what's the right balance and how much information from a KPI target directional trending perspective, and you'll hear more about that. You'll probably hear less this meeting, but in the future meetings you'll hear more dialogue going forward. This is just a quick status of where we are. I've kind of talked through most of these components. I think the important is that it's an ongoing part of our management tool, and so we are continuing to incorporate more and more of that in how we do the data-driven decisions we make. This is what it looks like. I think I showed this last time. This is the August release. As you can see, we are in still summer green and summer yellow. It is not all targeted to be completed, and that's a good thing because that shows that we're looking at each individual component and assessing where we are and getting a roadmap, corrective action to improve those processes. Next, this is just to remind everybody it's a drill down process. This is one from the GDD SLT performance, which is a collection, and it's now trended and targeted in the past. That's some of the feedback actually you guys gave us, that one of the things we started to do is develop KPIs, but we didn't have fully developed targets and trends, and this to show that we're making that step. I'm not going to talk through all these. There were three here that I showed as an example. Next piece is organizational excellence. This is just a quick status on where we are with that. It's a follow-up from our prior meeting in which I wanted to share. We have completed our internal first assessment. We have identified strengths and areas for improvement. We've shared some of those and we're continuing to work on them. We plan to, in FY16, continue to build a culture of organizational excellence by doing further training, learn more about EFQM, having each department do their own internal assessment individually and roll that up. And then by FY17, we're going to use an external assessment. IANA is continuing on their assessment process like they did. They did one, two internal, then they did an external. They did an internal this year, and now next year they will continue doing it. So that process also is continuing. Lastly, this is the roadmap for FY16. I don't need to talk about all those details. You're welcome to look at each one of the steps that gets us through this year. And we've now put a page on our ICANN.org website. We're very focused on continuous improvement, so you'll see some of those improvements and processes. And this is just to say it's in place, and you're welcome to look at all of the details. It is focused, and we continue to use ESQM as our foundational set of principles and pulling it together. Okay, that's it.
Thanks a lot, Xavier, Becky, and Carol. Is there any question on the slide we just see? Leonid, Steven, Leslie. Okay. Okay, ladies first, Leslie, and then Leonid and Steven.
I'm waiting for
you. No.
Carol, Xavier, etc. Yeah. Thank you very much for that. I was really pleased to hear that you're not going to change the format considerably because that really helps making year-on-year comparisons. But I'd also have my traditional nag about KPIs because although the plethora of information that's now available is positive and to be welcomed, I'm not sure that the KPIs still pass the test of actually measuring the objective. And for lots of those, you can drill down and say, well, this looks great. Does it actually measure the overall strategic objective? No, not necessarily. And I know we've had conversations about KPIs many, many times. And when you were referring on the things we have to learn was about integration. I think it's more fundamental than integration. It's a real kind of, does it pass the test of measuring what it is we're trying to achieve? And I think there's still some more work to be done there. Thanks.
Thank you, Leslie. I suggest we collect the questions and then you respond. So next is Leonid.
Thank you, Giovanni. Actually, I have 5 questions. Well, first of all, were legal costs unavoidable, and can the lessons be learned for the future? Because I guess $6+ million in legal costs—that's too much. We do understand the reason and the cause, but still.
Second, there was a commitment
some time ago to spend, if I'm not mistaken, $5 million on ICANN's technical excellence program. I may be missing something, but it was kind of an intent by joint letter, Steve Crocker and Fadi Shahadi, who that. What's happened with that? Could it pop up unexpectedly? Third, earlier this year, I checked whatever reports they were like on last year, on the year 2014, and there were like extensive leave packages still there for Rod Backstrom and some of his team, like, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars paid. Yeah, I mean, it was there, like, I don't know, it was in year 2014. So my question is, if Fadi is leaving, and some of his team may be leaving too, we should operate under this assumption, will there be any extensive lease packages for them, and how it will affect the budget? And will there be subsequently new hires, and how that would affect the budget? And finally, over these last 5 years, we saw some changes in operational focus from one point to another, from one issue to another, like multi-stakeholder reasons, and next year it was, for example, IANA transition, then something else. With a new CEO, there might be a radical change of the course of coming for ICANN. So what if that would invoke some extra costs? Is there a plan B for this? Thank you.
OK, you, Leonid, for this batch of questions. Stephen, and then Mathieu.
Hi there. I'm also trying to focus on some of the transition costs, and specifically in your slides that you presented with respect to the transition, you have lumped into other professional services the legal expenses that have been incurred by ICANN with Jones Day. You have split out the legal expenses being incurred by the transition working groups, and I was wondering if we could also split out of the professional services pie segment the legal expenses that have been incurred for the transition with Jones Day, so that we can get an overall look at the aggregate cost of legal for transition. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. And then I have Mathieu. And is there anybody else remote? No, I don't see anybody. Any further questions, so we can close the questions after Mathieu?
Yeah, I have a question and a comment.
Okay. So, Mathieu, a question and a comment, and you need to be close to the microphone, please.
So my comment on the risk management approach. I think there would be a lot of value in ensuring that the methodology is standard-based and can be externally audited, because I see a risk in ICANN's environment that the expectation for the level of maturity might be set too high in creating an undue burden, an undue cost onto the organization. And at the same time, I recognize the need to manage this very professionally. So that was my comment. And the question is whether some form of summary of the self-assessment USQM you've been doing and the kind of goals you're setting for your improvement initiatives could be disclosed. I would also be interested in knowing exactly what type of range of maturity you are in this model, which I'm familiar with, but that's probably, maybe that's too detailed and that's a secret.
Nothing's a secret.
Okay. Thank you, Mathieu. And, okay, I leave the floor to Xavier and Becky and Carol to answer all the questions.
Mathieu, you mentioned an external audit on something that I didn't understand. What
The risk management approach.
Yeah. So the assessment that we've done was done with an external firm as a help to try to do that in a standardized fashion. It's KPMG in this case. That's an audit firm that does that. And they've helped us develop that model of... So I think it will make more sense to everyone once we have the roadmap of once the target and then the roadmap to get to the target. I think the benefit and cost analysis will be more visible then.
That's why it was more a comment for the further step.
Right. Yeah, thank you. I'll go through a few things. Legal costs from Jones Day, they're there to the dollar. This is just FY15, so in response to your question, there is then a similar schedule. Becky, can you go back? For FY16, which is the past 3 months. So the third from the, yeah, that's on the website, of course, as you can tell. And it's also by firm, and just so that you know, on the website it also says, we produce that information quarterly from now on. The information, when we don't yet have the invoices, will be estimates, because the legal firms are not very good at producing invoices very quick. Actually, Adler is pretty quick. Within a month, we get the invoices. Sidley is ridiculous.
I'm not disclosing, but...
So that's... I'm assuming it addresses the question. Okay. There's no lease packages. Zero. Absolutely zero in the past 3 years. So I don't know what you've seen, but there's no lease packages, or maybe it's a vocabulary issue. There's each of the staff has a bonus
payment that's part of the annual compensation. But there's not been a leave package for Rob Beckstrom or any...
It was that financial statement for non-for-profit under the U.S. law. That was for year 2014. By that time, Rod has been gone for 2 years or so.
Right.
As well as, what was his name, the chief security officer?
Moss.
Yes, Jeff Moss.
Jeff Moss.
But still they were on the payroll.
No, no, but, that has nothing to do with
okay.
The packages.
So it might be, it might not be there, but I mean, well, they were, so I mean, I've...
No, but let's not make up things that don't
okay.
exist.
Okay.
We have a fiscal year that's different than the calendar year.
Absolutely.
So it's simply a, because they left at a period of time. But we report, but yes, Jeff left early 2014. He was there during 13.
Okay.
We reported the salaries of 13 at the very end of 14. So, of course,
right.
He was in the list. It's not a package. It's just his salary while he was there.
Okay.
There's not been one severance package paid at ICANN that I know of. Let's make it very clear.
Got it.
The 5 minutes of technical excellence, I'll just need a bit of your help to make sure I know what statement you're referring to so that I can track it
sure.
in the right fashion. Because it's not telling me anything right now, but we can also track technical related projects in the budget and be able then to address that. So I just want to make sure I get the source of that information. Can we avoid the legal costs relative to the transition? It amounts to a lot of money. Mathieu is my witness that we have worked together to try to get a little bit of a hold of that. I won't try to justify for others the use of that resource. I think it's considered a valuable resource for an extremely important topic. And I think that overall, the entire community supports the idea that the transition needs to be focused on and supported to completion, and that resources are required for that purpose. I think the legal advice provided by the various firms is considered of value. That value has a large cost, no question. And we, I think all of us, are concerned, some at various degrees, by the amount of money that represents. The board is very concerned. And I am very concerned. And we should all be very concerned. At the same time, it's a matter of whether the priorities are of the orientation. I can't say much more about it. Yes?
If you allow me just to...
Sure. Yeah.
Very shortly, the advice we're getting is extremely expensive. It is, however, of the highest quality. I think this cost is really the real cost. It's showing off the cost of the multi-stakeholder model, in a way, because it cannot be driven like regular legal expenses. And there's one parameter. It is also the result of the fact that ICANN's own legal advice is currently not being trusted enough.
That was the core of my question.
That's what was the question then?
Okay. Okay, as we have some time constraints, as we do not have this room for the entire afternoon, as we are having also many meetings in our agenda, and, you know, I had a sense when I started this meeting that accountability and transition would have somehow collected all the attention, and so let's finish to answer the questions, and is there any...
There's one
yeah.
left, which was relative to... What do we know what the costs will be post-transition of implementing the transition and carrying out the new mechanisms of accountability and some of the transition? So we think there will be costs. We think there will be significant. We don't know what they are. but there's no question that there will be very different mechanisms and processes that will need to be in place at ICANN that will drive costs that are very important. Let's bring up an example. There's many community members today who are saying that the legal advice we're talking about will need to continue. So that's an example. It's a question. But so there's review boards, review groups that will be permanent. So those will drive costs. So we just know it will be the case, but we don't know by how much and to what extent. And that's part of the planning that we'll do over the next year.
Okay, so Carol, the last.
Thank you. First, Leslie, I want to address your comment regarding KPIs. It's recognized both internally as well as by stakeholders that we have a long way still to continue to work on the KPIs. The challenge a little bit is once we really do get a good, comfortable definition, is collecting the appropriate data to support it. So there is two avenues at work. One is continually to doing a review and assessment. Do we have the right KPI for that goal, and to what level of that data do we want to show? An example today, I said that we have one per GDD that has changed. It used to be five separate ones. We've now rolled it up to kind of a composite index to make that point, to try to cover those kind of concerns. But by no means are we done, and we have a long way, I think, still to continue to. We're doing education and training and developing data all internally, and we now have a senior management team meeting approximately once per month where we actually review the KPIs we're using to help both internally do that and to continue to get feedback. And as I said, next meeting you'll see more on the KPIs, and I think you'll hear some stakeholder dialogue specifically to ensure we do that a better way. Last is, Mathieu, you mentioned that you'd like to hear more about our continuous improvement effort. Some of the examples are, very much like the planning process was recognized as a weak point in that report, and we've taken steps to that. The formal external one that Diana did, we shared all of that. There are a few bullets in this one that we will share, but since it was done internally, I'm not sure we were going to give you all of it because it's a lot of smaller granular pieces, not at the higher level at this point, but it is recognized everything from planning to some of our performance management tools to very specifically some of our processes, mega processes that we need to review and update, and I will look to see if I can put it on our continuous improvement page and put some specific examples to share.
Okay, just one last comment on the dashboard. Yeah, 10. It's not by chance that the dashboard is called a beta. It's exactly for that reason. It's because we recognize that, honestly, there's some KPIs that are good, others that are not that good. And sometimes when we feel that the KPI should be different but we don't have any data, sometimes it's a bit of an activity type of KPI rather than a performance measurement type of KPI, which we would ideally like to have. So there are shortcomings for sure, and it will continue to evolve to try to progress. But certainly your input on that would be really helpful because this is value into improving each of those KPIs that is provided to us so that we can do a better job. Thanks.
On personal experience of that journey, you'll now go off on a period of having lots and lots of KPIs before, and the whole industry around how can we measure and people and teams that are devoted to collecting measures and so on. I'd encourage us not to go down that route, but to try to include objectives that can be measured from data that is already part of the management kind of remit that you already have. And that's a difficult compromise sometimes, but there is always an evolution of not having any measures, having too many measures, not being able to see the wood for the trees, and then a kind of industry around collecting data because you have to have it because it's on the dashboard. So I would caution against that.
Okay, I really need to close this. Thank you. Thank you both.
Thank you both.
And thanks for this update on the 5-year operating plan and the preparation for the fiscal year 17. Again, we are going to go through some public comment periods, and this working group has been extremely active in the past. We'll make sure that part of the questions that have been raised during today's meeting will be also included eventually in the public comment, in the comments that we'll submit during the public comment period. So thanks again, Becky, Carol, and Xavier. And now there is this section regarding the discussion and exchange views on revenue expenses initiatives. And we have three volunteers, one who has just been going through this Trinity Power, as he was introduced to the OLC representative this morning, who's Mathieu. And Mathieu prepared some slides regarding the CCTLD, something that we have been investigating quite a lot in the central community. And then I have also Barak for the FTLD and also Leonid for the APTLD. So I'd like you to invite you to be as brief as possible so we can have some sort of discussion in the few minutes that we are left. And next time I will negotiate 3 hours with the assistant and so secretary so that we can be given a bit more relaxed time. So Mathieu.
Very briefly.
You need a microphone.
I need a microphone.
Yes.
Very briefly. The registration market growth slowing is a key aspect now. And I would say for ICANN it's a new thing to consider as well. Registration market is slowing down. The new DTLDs are the largest growing segment. They're coming from zero. And the way they're fueling the overall growth right now is not very significant, not seen to be significant, very significant in the near future. So for CCTLDs, I guess, who do contribute voluntarily to ICANN, I mean, the time of easy growth well over. Is cost control high on the agenda? I expect it's the same for ICANN. You've missed a few slides. The ICANN contribution may be one of the items that may be cut. And overall, it is very much the characteristics of a community maturing market, commodity pricing, a lot of pricing on costs that's going to affect your GTLD customers mostly, and concentration both at registry and registrar level are taking place. So that means maybe less accreditations in the future, although people tend to multiply accreditation from the same body, but you need to be aware of that. A couple of points on the perspective on the next slide, being really, really fast. We might, if you do just some linear analysis, you might get into, no, that's the previous one.
Sorry.
Previous one. It's, if you look just at the trends on a linear basis, rough analysis might be that the number of registrations starts going down overall by 2017. It's already the case in the center zone where the median, so half, more than half of the center CCTLD registries see their zone file going down. And not all of them can increase their prices. Well, I won't go into the reasons for that, which is on the third slide because I think our time is constrained. But revenues, that's going to be tough. It's easier for ICANN because you have this 25,000 euro threshold, but it's going to be one of the key factors that makes the small GTLDs not efficient economically. So I expect you'll get a lot of pressure to lower that in the future, or that will be a big issue.
The present, you mean? We have.
Yeah. Okay, so it's really a hot topic. Leonid.
Yes. Can I have this presentation? I have a question.
See you in the next.
The Leonid question.
Yeah. So I will echo Mathieu's. So we did enjoy positive growth in 2014, then trending down in this year, obviously. And for next years, our members predict minor stagnation. So no growth for next years or a very slight one. We do understand, though, that the retention renewals rate increased in APTLD over the last 2 years, and the median creation rate also increased. I will go now for to slide 4, please, if you don't mind. You can see that the average, the median price region-wise for that domain name registration is slightly over $11, and basically the CCTLDs are more like for commercial registrants rather than private individuals. And you can see that still CCTLDs hold more than 50% in the local market for registrations. And domain names registrations is their major operation. So for them, whatever drop in registrations might be a critical factor. And as mostly they are non-for-profit companies, you would imagine that it should affect their operation indeed, whatever decrease. Now, some speculations. This next slide, please. Yes, indeed. As we told, the new GTLDs have had a limited effect on the local registrations market. Then we can see that with more domains, more registrations, there will be less speculation moved in CCTLDs. Of course, our members consider that very important to raise awareness of CCTLDs per se, because people still do not understand exactly the difference between, for example, domain name and website, and do not really appreciate the value in the website. We need that increased engagement with global registrars, including global ones. Then, of course, the problem of branding, which is not that plumbing in Europe, is critical in Asia-Pacific. Prices are stable, have been stable for a while, so is there any room to move? It's a big question right now, especially in the times of economic hardships. And then, interestingly, potential factors which can affect the growth and registrations in the area. These are, of course, penetration rates, internet penetration rates, which are still, let's say, in the region of 40% region-wide, I would say. A very important role plays economic and institutional environment. Just to remind you that many economies are still not probably genuine market economies. And, of course, a lot of government regulation. To the extent that many CCTLDs are basically technical arms of local governments, we should not forget about this. And that's a big difference with Europe, I believe. Now, huge effect, as elsewhere, social media and mobile and apps usage and search engine algorithm, of course. And what our members really miss or lack is, of course, marketing and sales strategies. They are not particularly great in that. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Leonita. And we have Barak. Thank you.
Next slide.
Thank you.
Yes, slide.
I don't have a presentation there. I'll just do a quick presentation based on what I have prepared. So basically, in the Africa region, we have 1.5 million domain names for the CCTLD out of a global figure of 138 million. That is going by the domain name brief that was released in September. Out of these, we have 1 million in South Africa and 500,000 in the rest of the continent. Basically, the continent has approximately 1 billion citizens out of potentially 7 billion people in the whole globe. The focus in the African continent has been on the technical aspect, setting up infrastructure, but I would like to say that a lot has gone into this, and we have adequate technical capacity and a lot of trainers activities that are going on. The focus now is shifting to capacity building in marketing and business development. And ICANN has played a critical role in driving a lot of marketing and business development activities since the global stakeholder engagement team was formed. This has been done partly in collaboration with the regional top-level domain organization, AFTLD, and other partners on the ground. And the results have been three successful Africa Domain Name System forums through which we are seeing an increase in the interest in the DNS industry on the African continent. I think given the statistics that I have read out, the potential is great if the investment is met. And I think the investment that ICANN is making, especially in supporting the DNS forum and other awareness activities in the region, is likely to pay off in the organization. If you look, the number of Africans coming for ICANN meetings have significantly increased, and majority of them are coming on their own, meaning people are seeing value for the money that they are investing in this process. So I think we need to put in more. In the morning, I had the president saying that he's considering creation of a hub, because Africa is the only region without an ICANN hub right now, to be able to better increase the footprint of ICANN in the region. But in summary, I just want to say that more investment is likely to pay off, because the market is huge and we are seeing a lot of European registrars and other businesses coming into the region to take advantage of the opportunity that is there. So even as we look at the ICANN plan, I think let's factor in more investment in the region, because it will definitely pay off. That's what I have to say.
Thanks a lot, Baraka. You know, from the three input we have from the three regions, I believe we can now see that in the future we're going to have possibly different trends of growth in the different regions, because there are still regions with potential for growth, other regions for different factors that have saturated markets or markets that are seen experiencing a lower growth than in the past. So I believe that I come from the reaction that Xavier had against a comment by Mathieu. I believe that ICANN is aware that there are, you know, the growth pattern of TLDs, meaning new GTLDs, historical GTLDs and CCTLDs, there are different growth patterns at present around, and I think this should be, let's say, taken into due account when producing planning for the coming years. And I think that we are still in an environment where we are, you know, probably because of the new GTLDs, probably because of economic factors in some of the world regions. You know, there are, again, many elements that are impacting the TLD growth. As we have said, this working group has said in one of the recent comments that we have submitted that we invited ICANN to be quite prudent in the estimates for TLD growth for the future. And so we didn't have time to discuss this much today, and I'm forced to close the meeting because there is another meeting come in this room now, but probably in the future we're going to have more time to discuss this with ICANN staff and you know, see. A good opportunity could be this afternoon, late afternoon workshop at from 5 to 8 regarding the fiscal year 17 operating plan and budget. And again, we are all invited to attend this this meeting. That said, I would leave like this on this topic. So just you know, inviting both ICANN staff and all the members of this working group to continue to exchange information regarding the patterns that we are looking at in terms of TLD registration. we had another point on the agenda, which was point four. We can discuss this via email regarding the formation of the teams to respond and to produce the comment against the 5-year operating plan and budget update and the fiscal year 17 operating plan and budget. We have seen there are going to be more extended public comment period.
But they are combined.
Yeah, they are combined. But we will make sure that we will prepare well in advance so that we are ready to produce our input, which I can has always been very valuable. Is there any last-minute question, thing that you really like to say now, or we can postpone that to, you know, to discuss this via email?
Just one question.
Yeah.
I know the ICANN presentations are always public, Mathieu and Leonid, can we share it with the group? Mathieu, can we share your presentation with the group and therefore
will be public? Yeah, PDF it, but that's it.
Yeah. Okay, so thanks again to the CCNSO Secretariat for facilitating the meeting, to Bart for helping with the agenda. And again, it's an invitation to everybody to attend today's workshop at 5 in Roma, which is just at the beginning of this corridor about fiscal year 17.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
It's EcoSend. EcoSend.
Okay. Yeah, that's the first one.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, everybody.
With what budget?
For who?
Shoot.
Original.
Original.
Thank you. It was a bit rush meeting.
I can.
There's a lot of things.
You know which one they want.
No. Push them. And in fact, they, you know, people like Xavier.
Sure. Is that, yours or Xavier?
Yes, Xavier.
Yeah. Oh, that's
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no,
it's not.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was the mandate of this group.
Please
see them.